Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickled to death to be with you this Saturday and every Saturday. And in the studio, the greatest fisherman to walk the face of the earth, Mark Tobin, is here and present.
I didn't drop this week.
No, I had scouts out watching you. You were below the dam at Truman.
I was.
And I heard of the whole report, and people were watching you from afar with binoculars. Right. And they were impressed that you really, really stacked them up. Is that true?
It's true, yeah. Good. Unfortunately, it's no secret. And, I didn't go. There's a lot of people in the slack water area. They're dumping a lot of water out of Truman right now. And the slack water area is a very popular area right now. And it's just, you can have it. Yesterday morning at 9:30 in the morning, there was 55 boats there. And that was at 9:30 in the morning.
Oh!
And there's probably going to be 150 out there today. And there's just too many people down there. And a lot of people are spider rigging. And people are getting pissed off because you get too close to their boat. And there's a lot of yelling going on. That's just no fun.
Yeah.
You are going to catch fish. But I'd rather go somewhere else where there's not anybody or very few people and catch less fish, and I'll be a lot happier.
Well, here's the report I got on you. There was a guy in a boat watching. Him and his wife were watching, and he said we were all right with Mark being there. They put on his white robe and walked across the top of the water. Was there any validity to this at all?
No.
Did you part the water at all or anything, see where the fish were?
We lowered the level a little bit.
It said you kept peeing over the side.
That was not me. No, in fact, I had a lady in the boat with me.
And?
Well, so I didn't pee over the side.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But it was fun. This was the former biologist for Lake of the Ozarks, Kevin Richard, and his wife, Donna. He sent Donna fishing with me. He stayed home. They had back from a week and a half in New York with their grandkids. And he was tired. He writes for Muskie Mag. And he just felt like he had too much to get caught up on to go out fishing. So he sent Donna. And so Donna and I went fishing, and we just had a ball. I mean, she caught a lot of fish.
Cool.
We caught a lot of crappie and a lot of white bass. I thought that she was, according to Kevin, she wanted to catch white bass. And so that's what I was doing. I figured our best chance to catch white bass would be down below the dam.
Sure.
And she got there, and she had her crappie rod, and all she cared about doing was crappie fishing.
Like you.
Yeah. Well, so that's the only reason I was up there below the dam. But it turned out it was really good. Because we caught a lot of white bass and we caught a lot of crappie. Hmm. But we were fishing deeper. And I'm fishing 10 to 12 foot deep. And anywhere where there is a cove or a current break, a little pocket along the bluff or whatever, where there's a current break, those fish are lined up inside those current breaks. And we were catching them, again, 10 to 12 foot deep was the magic number. And we would just vertical jig. You didn't have to cast. And you didn't know if you were going to catch a crappie or a white bass.
Oh, no.
So a lot of people were getting up in the coves and fishing up shallow. And at Lake of the Ozarks, the fish, they are starting to spawn. I had a couple of crappie that were oozing eggs already.
Wow.
A lot different up on Truman. They're not up on the banks like that yet. The guys that are fishing the banks are having a pretty hard time. But then I was talking to Richard Bowling this morning, our guide extraordinaire on Truman. And he went up on the lake yesterday, and he's fishing in the middle of these coves and creeks, 14 foot of water, 14 foot down, 14 foot of water. And they hammered him. They're catching a lot of them, but he watched the guys up on the bank, and they're not getting a bite.
Huh.
So they're still staged out a little bit. The lake is still a little high. They're dumping water, and the fish haven't moved up on the bank yet on Truman. But, a night like we had that full moon last night. I'm telling you what, if you want to get away from the crowd, go fishing at night.
Yeah.
With a bright moon like that.
I agree.
A lot of spawning activity occurs during a full moon. So I just, the heck with us during the day, at least below the dam. There's just so many people down there.
You know the next question I'm going to ask you, don't you?
No.
Any walleye?
No walleye.
None there.
Now, I did hear from Richard that there are still a few stragglers being caught here and there. But the spawn is over, and they are recuperating. And, you know, within the next couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, they'll start biting again. And that's the best time of the year, in my opinion, to catch mm-hmm. walleye. That's after they've spawned, and they go on a feeding rampage.
It sure do.
And they're a lot more predictable, and they're very aggressive. To me, that's the best time of year to catch them. So that's something to look forward to in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
And they'll move out on the flats? Is that where you would
right,
go?
Yeah, Main Lake flats, anywhere from, I mean, they'll find them as shallow as 4 to 5 feet. But, you know, as deep as up to 20 feet. So trolling crankbaits is a very popular way to catch them at that time. But for some reason, the Kansas lakes, they're starting to wake up, but they're a couple of weeks behind.
It's cold.
Yeah, well, right.
39 when I left St. Joe this morning.
Couple of weeks behind the Missouri lakes.
Yeah.
But it's good everywhere. Most every lake is, I mean, they're catching a lot of fish around the banks and a lot of places. And that's just a wonderful time. And I'm hearing reports of a lot of mushrooms getting found.
Yes. Sacks and sacks of them.
I hate that when I don't have them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too. Crappie fillets and mushrooms sure go down good, don't they?
If you had a last meal to pick, well, would that be a
all them people on death row, that's what they want, you know, is morels and
fried crappie.
Yeah.
That'd have to be on my menu.
Yeah.
I'd have a hard time picking one thing, but that'd be right there.
Well, interesting time, isn't it, spring?
Oh, gosh, isn't it a great time to be outside? And this year we're having some spring. Last 2 years, it just went from
winter to summer.
We had a couple of days of spring and then summer, hot and dry.
Yeah.
So this has just been a very enjoyable spring. Yeah. And everything that's blooming is blooming really good, and it's pretty.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We been out after the wild and sometimes evasive wild turkey.
I saw that you
sent you a nice picture. Me and my boy, we doubled up. Had some birds come in and got two gobblers out of the deal, you know. But I'm hearing a lot of jakes in the woods, and that's a very good sign for next year. You know, there'll be an awful lot of birds around. My good friend Kelly, of course, he shot one at 5 yards with a bow and arrow.
Wow.
He's out there listening right now, and he's out there waiting for him to start going. Can't hunt legally until Monday, so which is kind of bizarre to me. You know, most states you can harvest two birds. They don't care if you shoot them both the same day or Monday, Tuesday, or whatever. But Missouri is different. You know, you shoot one on Monday, you got to wait a whole Monday till next Monday before. I don't know. You know, it's just part
that
of
that makes no sense.
The deal. But I have not, and I've kind of kept my ear to the ground. I have not heard of a shooting or hunting accident yet.
No, I haven't either.
So I'm tickled to death, you know, on the deal. I did get a lot of feedback. We talked last week in regards to using this fan. You know, that the guys are hunting with a turkey fan, and they put them up, and they crawl up on the bird and all that stuff. The stupidest thing. I thought I'd see them outlawed, but what the hey. You know, I've got a good friend that manufactures those, you know. But, gee whiz, you just might as well put a target on your back at the same time on the deal. So, and I think probably, and maybe there has been an incident, but I'm not aware of it. But seeing how it's not as greened up as usual, you know, been colder at night, and I think you get visibility a little bit
better.
Farther away, and so you can identify the target a little bit better and that kind of thing. But for you guys who are just now getting ready to go, you probably should have been in the woods by now. They are gobbling a little bit earlier than the norm, seems to me like, but be very careful out there. You can only pull the trigger when you see the beard on the front of the wild turkey, and always remember that in the deal. There's nothing worse. I did an interview with a gentleman who shot and killed a guy. It was the most emotional thing I've ever done in my entire life. I cried, he cried, his family cried, and everybody in the room cried. And it was pretty dramatic for him. He was a young fella, probably about 20 years old when he shot and killed a barber, of all people. But it can happen to you. Please be careful. More than likely, if you're going to have an accident, it's getting in and out of the car, crossing a fence, loading the gun. But please take a little bit of time and take it easy out there. You know, we got 2 weeks left, basically, and you can still get into them. But it's pockets of birds. Some places I talk to humans are a plethora of turkeys, and some places it's just pretty darn tough. So Holt County is very, very tough. Gentry County, I went up there opening day. I think I heard 3 different birds. Had to move, had to drive about 80 miles the other way just to get into some birds, but it was worth it on the deal. But it's just a weird, weird deal. So, but take your time, have some fun out there and enjoy it. and be very, very careful. People do get shot. I guess I got to talk to you about hybrids. Was there any hybrids below the dam?
Yes, there is a few being caught. And the best place to catch them right now, if you are familiar with below the dam at Truman, there is the slack water area. And then where the water that is being released from the dam meets that slack water, there's a current break right there. Right along the edge of that current is where they're catching hybrids and whites. I guess, according to Richard Bowling, he was fishing there yesterday, and they just had to leave because they were trying to catch crappie, and they could not keep the hybrids and the white bass off of their rods.
Oh, no.
Isn't that a heck of a problem?
That's a terrible problem. Terrible. Blue cat, channel cat, flathead, heard
anything?
Not
much, no. There are a few being caught down below the dam, and there's a lot of guys that have jug lines out, and they're catching a few, but it's not on fire right yet. Yeah. But it should be. It should be getting really good.
Getting close.
Yeah,
it?
Right. Now, I've caught a lot off of my dock the last couple of weeks.
Did you?
Uh-huh. But mostly channels of smaller blue here and there, but... I'll tell you, it's just amazing how much of a difference there is between Lake of the Ozarks and Truman, though. And it was interesting to me that I was able to catch so many fish 10 to 12 foot deep, but then I could go up on the banks over. Now, I've got a little cabin. I'm at the 66-mile marker on Lake of the Ozarks and could come back to my place and catch fish in a foot of water, and a half of water.
Makes a world of difference.
It's like a completely different lake. But that when they're running water like that, it's just a completely different thing. And boy, you can sure use that current to your advantage if you find those current breaks. A lot of bait fish get in, were out of that current, and the game fish will follow suit. But again, up there by the dam, it's no secret. And if there's any spot like that, you'll see one or two or three boats, you know, on a spot. And so it makes it kind of hard. But like I said, get out there. It's full moon the next couple of nights. It'd be a good time to get out there and beat the crowd and do it at night. And you'll catch just as many at night.
And you got your name on the side of your boat and Midwest Outdoors and all that stuff. People should part and get out of the way.
No. No, that would be a bad idea.
Way.
I know, right?
I went up to Dr. Smith and went through his facilities.
Oh, yeah, you told me that. You said you were really impressed.
To say I'm impressed, that guy might be the best veterinarian in the United States of America. His facilities, you would like this. They got a room in there with a TV and a chandelier for your dog if you want to babysit it.
Really?
Seriously. I saw
that
it.
Seems a little excessive.
Yes. People were kind of excessive about there was a lady brought a dog in there while I was standing there, and they were going to do something, doing maintenance or whatever, and it was like emotional parting.
Oh, my gosh.
She didn't want to leave the poor little dog for a little bit, on the deal. But we got to go back. He turned me through the whole thing. I know he was busy, and he's such a nice guy. And my dog, I took my lab up there to have him checked, for heartworms and stuff, immediately walked in the door and left a deposit right on the floor. My wife said she'd never been so embarrassed in her entire life. And I said, it's another lab, It's the way they are. But the micro side of it, I got a lab back there. He has a scanner, where you go inside the tube, where the x-ray, whatever they call those things, $750,000 worth.
Dang.
And the place and the staff is so polite and nice and professional. I was so impressed.
Where is this at?
You would ask. It's up by Riverside.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
What's the name of it?
Animal. Oh,
I hate to hit you with these hard questions.
Blank. And I was just looking for his card because I forgot. But there's nobody like him. I mean, the facilities is fantastic. Mm. Would you like to take your beagle up there and put him in the chandelier with the TV on?
I don't know that the chandelier is really necessary, but...
Oh, yeah, I don't know,
No, if there was a squirrel there, the dog would be happy.
It was very impressive. We got to get him back on.
Oh, yeah,
and now
he's
that I know
guest.
More about the facilities, it's something to see.
He knows his craft.
Oh, unbelievable. And I got 40 people on staff.
Oh, my gosh.
That's how big he is. That's how big it is. It's an amazing facility.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Hey, we are brought to you by my favorite sponsor. Well, I don't know if he's my favorite, but I sure like the guy an awful lot. That's Highway Trailer Sales. My goodness, what a good guy. Terry Lee, Can't say enough good things about this human. Shook his hand, felt like I met him for 20 years ago. For you guys that are looking for a trailer that go behind a rig for an 18-wheeler, this is the store. They got them on sale. Also, if you need maintenance on them, which they seem like they have always broke all the time, if your taillights are out or your brakes are not working or your leaf springs are bad, there's no finer people. And they take it very hard, very professional, and they know that time is money. And so when you come in there, they drop what they're doing. There's 10 bay garage. There's no facilities that are any better than these guys, and they care about you as a customer. It's Highway Trailer Sales, my good friend Terry Lee. Can't say enough good things about this guy. Yeah, and that whole facility's up there. It's located at 1850 Southern Road. That's just west of World of Fun off 435 if you happen to be looking around for one. But this is the guy. Professionalism is the name of the game, and they will take care of you. If you've got a bimp in your trailer, they will fix it. A bimp. You ever have a bimp?
I have had the bimp, yes, the bimp. Old bimp play. Yeah.
Go by and see Terry Lee. I'm at the Clouseau sent you. Inspector Clouseau. Highway Trailer Sales. Terry Lee, the finest human to walk upright. 1850 Southern Road, Kansas City, Missouri. I don't think people understand how lucky they are to have this kind of facilities in here in North Kansas City. Great, great people. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. Going to take a little break. We'll be right back with you.
Everybody get up.
6:15, man. Think anybody's listening to us?
There's a lot of traffic out there on the road today. I don't know why.
I just love this song.
Get up.
Have you ever seen the video?
No. I can't see you jamming to this, though.
This is cool. I go down the road jamming.
Thank you, Chris.
Maybe I'm going blind.
Chris Bolig running the show. He does a great job.
The reason I wanted to play that bumper music, the line in that is maybe I'm going deaf, maybe I'm going blind. I took my boy turkey hunting. We have four gobblers come in. I didn't see any of them.
Seriously?
Seriously. I'm getting old.
Yeah.
Blurred.
I know that feeling, unfortunately.
Yeah. Man, and all of a sudden, all hell broke loose. Man, boom, bitty boom, you know, it was all over with. But, woo!
We got to say good morning to our in-studio guest here. He's unusually quiet. That's Scott Bethel. He's the former producer of the American Outdoorsman television show and radio show. Good morning, Scott. Say good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Scott. Hey, we're brought to you by King City Lumber Company, another one of my great sponsors. I just love these humans. For you guys that have lost everything like most of us have, you need to rebuild. Well, these are the guys. They will rebuild you your cabin in the woods, your hay barn out back, your loafing shed, whatever you want done. They are professionals. They do it, and they do it right. First-class guys, first-class lumber, first-class master carpenters are about as good a humans you'll ever see walk the face of the earth. KingCityLumber.com. Go to their website. You'll be on there about 20 minutes. And if you don't see what you like, they will help you design and build whatever you want. And these are the best. When they come to your residence and when they leave, you will be the happiest human other than Mark Tobin. Mark, you smile too much. You ever think about that?
It's because you make me smile.
I understand. Yeah.
I mean, look at you. How can you look at you and not smile?
I never thought of that before. This thought never went through my brain, as they say. KingCityLumber.com, Marty and Monty Tunks, great people. The whole family have been doing this for generations now. Give them a call, 660-535-4337. 660-535-4337, but better yet, go to KingCityLumber.com and take a look at what they've got to offer. It's absolutely unbelievable. So what the hey? Hey, we got Ramsey Russell.
This big medicine.
Is it for a duckaholic? This is about me, like us calling the Pope. You know, we get through about that quick, you know. And I stumbled into Ramsey Russell by the Odyssey. I read about him, knew about him. And I'm in Perkins in St. Joe, Missouri, having a cup of coffee, and I see two guys in camo. Blabby like I am, I go talk to everybody wearing camo, you know. So I walk across there, say hello to him. Where are you going? Well, he's going up, I think, on the Platte River or something, go duck hunting. So as I walk out the door and I see his trucks there, and it says gotducks.com. And I knew who I was talking to then. I turned around, went right back, and I said, man, I've got to get you on a radio show. Because, you know, here's the deal. I'm out of mallards. I'm out of teal. We've eaten them all up. Now we're down to eating coots. So we're at the bottom of the barrel.
Time to go fishing.
Yes. So, you know, you're right. But, you know, duckaholics are a strange group of people.
Yes, you are.
Yes, we are. And May and June, all of a sudden, the hair starts standing up on the back of your neck. You want to go kill something. It flies by. I'm one of the few people left in America that makes a living doing weird things to small animals. I don't know why I said that. But anyway.
Rewind that part.
Rewind that part. Bleep it out. But it is just weird that I ran into this guy, because I was his biggest fan. I've read everything and knew about him and all this kind of stuff. And here I am having a cup of coffee in Perkins in St. Joe, Missouri. And there he is. You know, just weird. It's maybe the planets and the stars lined up on the deal. So that's going to be, if you got a duckaholic in the family, you might want to listen, because opening day is like next week.
Somewhere.
And it might be in Argentina. It might be in Australia. It might be wherever.
Isn't that something?
Yeah,
he hunts them year-round.
Yeah. I think we talked briefly, but I think he starts like May 1st, and I don't think he's got another day off until probably about April of next year.
That's a tough job right there.
And not only does he have the duck hunting, he's got the wing shooting, you know, whether you want to shoot white-winged doves or things like that. We'll talk to him. We'll have him on at 6:30.
Yeah.
Who we got next weekend?
We have a representative from Garmin. You would ask me his name. I don't remember his name off the top. But we're going to be talking about the hottest.
Are you getting old?
Well, heck yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But we're going to talk about the hottest electronic going on right now, and that's the LiveScope, Garmin's LiveScope. Did you just see on Facebook, somebody showed a picture on a LiveScope that a guy was fishing in one of the Kansas lakes and came across an image of a vehicle.
Really?
It was a van, and you could see it clear as day. You could see the windows on it, the wheels. And they sent some divers down there, and they recovered it. It was a van that was reported stolen last year.
Wow.
But I mean, that LiveScope, it's just amazing. It's live video is what you see. You see the fish swimming, you can see your lure going down to the fish, you can see the fish come up and hit your line. So we're going to talk about that and whatever else is new and exciting with Garmin. So yeah, really looking forward to that.
Based here in Kansas City?
Yep.
That's is right. He going to be in the studio? We're doing
no, he's
phone?
Out of town. So
out of town.
Unfortunately,
we're doing Fune.
Yes.
I wish he would come in sometime.
Yeah, I know.
That
well, we'll get him in.
Really be good. That'd be good.
But another thing, you know, if you don't have the fishing fever right now, you just ain't going to get it. Yeah. And one thing that you might consider, have you seen these Jackson kayaks, fishing kayaks?
I got a story about it. Go ahead.
Well, Joe Falco, Sportsman's Outfitter Marine, they've got these fishing kayaks, and they're just unbelievable. And a lot of these things you can pedal, so it leaves you hands free to do your fishing. But the thing is about these kayaks, and these are starting to get really popular. I saw some down in the Slackwater area down there below Truman.
Did you?
Uh-huh. But the thing is, there's a lot of city and county lakes here in Kansas and Missouri that you can't put a big boat on, but there's lots of fish in there. And we've talked before about the bluegill that are available in some of these lakes.
Hybrids.
Oh my God! As far as fighting, you can't beat them. I mean,
as far as eating, they are the best, in my opinion.
That's the best eating fish there is, hybrid bluegill. But anyway, you can get these kayaks on these small city and county lakes, and it just opens up a whole new world of fishing opportunities for you. So get out there and check out those kayaks. We're going to have Joe on in the next couple of weeks. I think it's in May. He's got a big tournament going on.
Cool.
A kayak tournament. We're going to get the information on that. But go check those out, man.
You know, being the duckaholic I am, I saw the guys on Bob Brown with kayaks, with Jackson kayaks.
Is that right?
One, easy to hide. Two, you know, easy to maneuver.
Right.
They pile a big sack of decoys up on the front of them, and away they go.
Wow.
You know, it was just amazing. Now, it was there were three kayaks laying on after the flood on the levee system down there. The Jackson kayaks kayak is gone. and you see the mud tracks where they walked.
Is that right?
I was in the middle of the night, or the owner got it back. But I thought, well, darn, there's two other ones there, but they didn't go back and get those. But they got the Jack's kayak out there. And it looked to me like it was almost brand new.
Wow.
I'd be ashamed to buy one and have the flood take it away on the deal. But boy, you know, and Dick, my brother Dick, guide down the White River.
Right.
It's the rage down there is the kayak fishing.
Is that right?
On the trout. You know, you can, you know, kind of teach them at places. There's little holes that you can stop and fish, you know, and they would get into them, get out of them, and all that kind of stuff. I think they even got a motorized one now, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Well, in fact, these ones that have the pedals, it's got like a trolling motor that can replace the pedals.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's my kind of deal.
You got that right,
Pedaling stuff would get old real quick, wouldn't it? Okay, you know. Well, I tell you what, I'm fired up this morning. I really want to be doing this interview. We're going to have Ramsey Russell on, and what a great human. And I think if you're a duckaholic, if you've got family members that maybe want to get away someplace unique, maybe go to Russia and hunt ducks, this is the show. Call them, get them out of bed. That's why I had them play that music.
Wake up.
So wake up at 6:15 in the morning. So anyway, you're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We got to take a little bit of a break. We'll be right back with you. Yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. And by the magic of the telephone, I've been really looking forward to this all week, the interview. One of my favorite humans. I'm a big fan of this gentleman. It's Ramsey Russell. Ramsey, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good this morning. How are y'all?
Doing just great. Doing just great. Are you any relation to me, you think, with that name Ramsey?
No. I don't think there's any relation. You got an A in your last name, and I got a... Well, you got an A in Ramsey, and I've got an E in Ramsey.
Yeah, I think we're the same clan, though.
Well, that is his first name also.
Don't confuse with facts. What's the matter with you? That's my co-host. Don't pay attention to him. He's just here.
Getducks.com.
Unbelievable.
That's us.
Tell us, what is that, getducks.com?
We're a travel service. We 17 years now, we've been traveling all over the world. It started humbly enough in Alberta. An outfitter asked me to start bringing a few guests up there to hunt with him. I was still a federal government employee. And that's how it started, never dreaming it would get out of hand and we'd end up on six continents chasing ducks.
Six continents. How did that happen?
One hunt at a time. You know, and it really, you know, in the age of the Internet, anybody can find anything on the Internet. I mean, you just try it. You can find anything in the world you want to find. And what you find out, though, is, you know, ducks migrate. A lot of different species around the world, if you're into that. And so we hunters end up wanting to kind of migrate too. And anybody that's traveled enough realize that even though you can find anything on the Internet, some people can be anything on the Internet.
So true.
And it's just not quite the hunt you want. And so people started relying on us or asking us to find different hunts. And that was, you know, that's kind of how it evolved. It was like, at a duck hunter, I started off just wanting to really just increase my opportunities to duck hunt. And that's how I ended up going to Canada. I just wanted to go to Canada and get an early shot at them and see what that was all about. And I just realized one day that, you know, it's duck season somewhere. Every single morning you get up, brush your teeth, you can think to yourself, it's duck season somewhere today on Earth. And it is.
It really is, isn't it? Hard to believe, isn't it? Yeah. What, I guess, I got a lot of dumb questions. I'm notorious for dumb questions, but something really sticks out in your mind, some of the most favorite places to go right now?
Yeah, it really does. Now, I'm going to tell you, Argentina and Mexico, those are our two big hunts. I mean, that's our, gosh, that's consumed a lot of our time with clients. We sell out lodges down in Argentina. We sell out lodges down in Mexico. It's just a good, fun trigger pulling vacation, you know, especially for a duck hunter coming out of this last duck season. It's fun to go somewhere and just shoot a bunch of ducks. But, you know, right now, one of my favorite locations, and understand, I love to duck hunt. I like the sport of calling and figuring the ducks out, you know, taking the fundamentals of hunting, just like, you know, a daddy teaches his little boy how to the fundamentals of baseball. It doesn't matter how far up in the big leagues you get, it really kind of all boils down to the fundamentals. And I really like that fundamental element of duck hunting, but I like seeing new places. I like that unexplored, uncharted type environment. And a few years ago, we found an area called Azerbaijan, and I was looking in that part of the world, really kind of up in Russia for the Volga River Delta. A lot of Eurasian species coming through there. When they come through Russia, it's kind of like a flyaway state. It's kind of like they're coming through the Dakotas in our part of the world, and they're pin feathered, and it's very early. And I just one day got to wondering, where the heck does the Volga River go? Well, it goes into the Caspian Sea. And I started doing my research and started, you know, digging around. And one time somebody asked me, how do you find all these hunts? And the truth of the matter is, guys, you know, a lot of these hunts find me.
I'll bet.
It's a phone call or an email. You know, just I don't know how people find us. You know, I posted a picture. Here's an example. The Internet is an amazing place. I posted a picture on Instagram the other day of myself down in Argentina, and I was telling a story because we're doing a video series. About every 2 months, we turn out these little short stories, and a couple of days ago, we just aired an Argentina story. And I was doing a lead-in, and I posted a picture on the Internet, and in 8 minutes after I posted that picture, somebody from Libya had sent the picture to an outfitter in Argentina, one of my partners who doesn't speak English, who sent it to my interpreter in Argentina, who sent it back to me. So it had just boomeranged around the world.
What in the world?
This picture I had posted.
That is insane.
It's a very small world, but that's kind of how we ended up in this country called Azerbaijan. We hunt. It's an amazing country. I mean, they're Persians, you know. We're hunting literally 10, 12 miles from the Iranian border on a massive wetland. Must be 100,000 acres at average pool. It's ephemeral wetland, you know, so it dries up. It's got a lot of moist soil. It's got some deep waters. It's got some little quiet backwaters surrounded by grass, airy little potholes. And we shoot a lot of Eurasian greenwings, mallards, pintails, gadwalls. Then we get into some real crazy stuff like ferruginous poachers, red-crested poachers, common shell ducks. And that's just it's just a very, very interesting place. But how you go to somewhere so remote, so different, that speaks such a different language, and there's no common barrier. Like, if you're in a country that speaks Spanish, you can kind of wing it. I don't have to speak Spanish to communicate with my guide. You know, we can figure things out. But to go to Azerbaijan, and you step off on these little P-row boats, the guy stands up, and he push-pulls you, and you dare not move too far to the left or the right, or you're going to tip the canoe, and you're going just for miles up through the wow. swamp. Through the grass, and they set up decoys perfectly, and they call ducks a lot with their mouths. I bring my own calls, and there's absolutely no common denominator in our language, but as duck hunters, we communicate, and after a day or two, you become pretty good friends with this guy, just like we all gone duck hunting together and got to talk stories.
Sure.
You become friends with these people, and I so enjoy that.
I'll bet.
And just how all of we duck hunters worldwide, no matter what language we speak or what we eat or the God we worship, we're at the end of the day, we're just duck hunters. Which I told this story to an editor one time in a magazine, and he ended up quoting it and putting it in his little editor notes there up in the front of the catalog. But I told him, you know, you could put a Pakistani feudal lord, a redneck from Mississippi, an NBA player, and a guy that works at Firestone all together in a duck blind. Put any four people in the world in a duck blind as duck hunters, and in that moment, while that duck hunt's going on, we're all just duck hunters. Yeah. Nothing else matters. And yeah. and that to me is, I don't know, it's just very interesting, and I really enjoy the people component of duck hunting.
Hmm. Well, this is Ramsey Russell from GetDucks.com. What time of year do you fish there, Ramsey?
Fish.
I'm hunt there. You know what? I got on my
mind. Yeah, you're mine.
Well, you know, we should be catching brim at Camp Rock. Yeah, right. We've gotten to that much rain. We went to a crawfish bowl last night. We're talking about this very thing. We've got a pond with some big old bluegills in it right now. We should be frying brim filet.
Oh, nothing better than that.
We think it's because we're getting so much rain. We're getting these real big rainstorms once or twice or three or four times a week. It just won't quit raining. and we think it's got the fish off right now. Either the water's a little too deep or a little, probably just a little too cold for
you're
them
right.
to
yeah. right.
start picking up right now.
One of the guys asked me, said, ask him about king eiders.
Absolutely. The king eider, look, there's a lot of people in the world, or a lot of people in America especially, that are chasing the North American species. And, you know, you travel all over the world to shoot ducks. But let me tell you, you know, a man could really travel all over the United States and encounter all the different species and hunting types and hunting communities and hunting cultures and hunting styles just right here in the United States. It's amazing how diverse we are because of our different species. We've got, depending on how you count them, some people say 41. I think that's a little short when you count subspecies of ducks. You've got, close to 60 subspecies of ducks and geese right here in North America. But the king eider is the cat daddy king of all.
It really is.
You've got to go further. You've got to go remote. And we've looked for these birds, and we've scouted these birds all over the world now, other continents too. And practically the best place on earth to shoot king eiders is on a 40-square-mile piece of volcanic rock 800 miles from Anchorage in the middle of the Bering Sea in January. You may remember that show back in the day, Deadliest Catch.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they always had that, during the season, they always had that episode where they were catching the filio crabs, and all of a sudden the ice floes were coming in, and their boats were turning to ice, and they were having to beat the bow, you know, with break off the ice off the boat and pull the traps, you know, and then they would come into this plant and drop off their filio crabs, and where those that fleet is coming in to sell the snow crabs is where we hunt king eiders.
It's a
heck of an adventure, and I'll tell you this, you've never felt so insignificant, relevant to the universe as sitting on a rock looking at 20-foot breakers waiting on a king eider to come by close enough to shoot, or to be on a boat, and no matter how big the boat is, it's a duck boat, On the Bering Sea, and drifting with king eider decoys, waiting to shoot one of those birds. It's an incredible species. He's called the king because he's the deepest diving duck. Like, you know, for example, they come down with that ice flow. They come down with that Arctic front that's pushing those filio crabs on the bottom of the ocean, and that's what these birds are doing. They're diving down and eating small crabs and crustaceans down the bottom, and supposedly they're the deepest diving duck in the world, but they're just they have no affinity for land. The hens, they'll come up on land and nest and do their thing, but really and truly they're aquatic birds. They want to be off in the ocean doing their living. They've just got to come out long enough to oil themselves a little bit, but that's it. They, you know, this rock just happens to be, this island just happens to be in a major flight corridor to where they're just kind of coming by it close enough sometimes, up in those protected waters to hunt. But it's a you feel like you've gone halfway across the world to get to that part of Alaska.
I look at that species. I've never harvested one, and of course never been up in that area. But they're so darn pretty. I mean, they're just the most gorgeous, unique bird I've ever looked at, I think. You know, we had a gentleman. They had a special on Outdoor Channel's To Kill a King. Was the name of it, and Tony Vandemore from here in Missouri went up there, and I think the Benelli sponsored him on that thing, and those guys, I was sitting there watching them, and they're covered with ice, they're covered with snow, the waves are hitting them, and they were having a ball. I mean, they were just grinning from ear to ear, and it had to be almost miserable.
It's the challenge, and it's the sport, and it's being in that, you know, you're digging deep to earn, you know, whereas we're shooting mallards in Mississippi, Missouri, Arkansas, whatever we're hunting, you know, you're out there to shoot 4 to 6 birds. And really and truly, when somebody were to walk into my booth and ask about king eiders, it's like literally they come up and they said, I've got every species in North America but one. Uh-huh. And they're holding up their index finger. I just want to go up there to get this one bird.
Yep.
You know, so you're going that far. The limit's 4 for non-residents, but you're going that far really just to put your hands on that one trophy.
Wow.
One bird. And it's really duck hunting. If you're not a duck hunter, a lot of people think we're all crazy getting out there around water in cold weather anyway. But to go to Alaska on the Bering Sea, where the ambient temperature because of the Pacific Current might only be 25 to 32, 33 degrees. But let me tell you, it is a brutal environment because of the wind and the splash and the water coming in, it's a very, very brutal environment. At times it'll get much colder, it'll feel much colder than that. I was up there for 8 days one year, myself and a rider, and we were able to get out on the water, and that's where the magic happens, is in the boat on the water when you're trolling decoys, which means you can't hunt those birds under motorized power. You've got a string of decoys out, and you've got the wind pushing you, and it just you're up and down rocking, and you're just drifting and looking a foot off the water for that king to come out of nowhere over those decoys.
Whoa.
And but we were able to get out for half a day.
Well,
just one morning we were able to get out in 8 days.
And in 8 days.
Magic. Everybody in camp limited.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's
isn't that
where
something?
The magic happens. And that, you know, it's just the patience and the perseverance of just waiting and being in that humbling environment, and then it all comes together. That's what, and I think that show did a very good job of capturing it. And it sure made our phones blow up too.
I'll bet.
We've got king otters for the upcoming season. We only take 40 hunters a year. That hunt has been sold out. It's been sold out since January. In fact, during convention in January this year, we started booking hunts for 2020 and 2021 for that hunt.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Duck hunters are nuts.
Hey, Ramsey,
duck hunters are crazy. We're a dedicated lot.
Yeah, we are.
That's the truth.
This is Ramsey Russell. GetDucks.com. If you want more information on that, look it up. Ramsey, I have a note here. Do you have a podcast coming up here in June?
I do not. There's a podcast that a friend of mine, Rocky LaFleur, hosts. It's called the End of the Line Podcast.
Right.
Yeah.
And I actually meet with him weekly, and I've known Rocky a long time, just through acquaintance or kind of online and things of that nature. He lives across the state from me. Well, I'll tell you where he lives. He lives in Oxford, Mississippi, which is where Ole Miss is, and I'm a state graduate. So, but we still get along. And he called me up last year. They knew a little bit about my personal history, and he called me up and said, Ramsey, a lot of people know you because of GetDucks.com. They know what you do. They know you travel. They know you shoot these ducks. You know, a lot of clients. But we'd like to tell your personal story. We'd like to hear how, despite what happened to you as a child, you became GetDucks.com. You know, it's something, it's one of those kind of things, you know, like my granddaddy's generation, when they came back from World War II, they just, no matter what horrors they had seen over in the European or Asian theater, they just came home and forgot about it,
went
locked
duck
it up
hunting.
In a box and just went on with their lives, the world's greatest generation. And I guess maybe that's how I was raised. I just put my past in the past and moved forward and tried to ignore it. But it was, for me, It ended up being about a three-part series just on that part, about just talking about I was involved in a home explosion when I was, well, it was 2 weeks before my 16th birthday. I was out there cleaning some paintbrushes, and flame on a water heater cut on, ignited the gasoline fumes. It was just like an internal combustion of a carburetor. Bam, it blew up.
Wow.
I died that night. And they told my parents, your son's got an 8% chance of living, and he's going to lose his right arm and both his legs if he makes it. And, you know, I ended up spending 6 months down in a Galveston burn center. And I'll tell you all this. While I was there, now I was deep, deep, deep down a rabbit hole, crazy land or something. It wasn't because of medication. They wouldn't give me that kind of stuff because they needed my skin to heal quick so they could do skin grafts.
Mm.
And so, but I was just in a place they were worried about for a long time. In the last 2 months I was in that burn unit down in Galveston, a Shriners burn unit, I came out and could think, and I never will forget, ever will forget, sitting there watching the TV in a hospital room and realized it was opening day of dove season for the first time that I can remember since I was 5 or 6 years old. I wasn't out in a dove field with my grandfather. I was sitting in a hospital room, and I just made a vow. If I ever got out of that place, I'd never miss another day of opening dove season. And that really, you know, those kind of little promises get you from point A to another point, point B, point C. That's really kind of how it all started. But, you know, I told that story on that podcast, and I have, no matter where in the world I'm sitting, every Wednesday or Thursday morning, Rocky calls on the telephone, and we record a podcast about somewhere I'm at or some aspect of duck hunting or my thoughts or opinions on something, and we end up doing a podcast every week, End of the Line Podcast.
Yeah.
It's called Life Short, Get Ducks.
Oh, right. Like it.
Based
I like it.
Live short, get ducks. Yeah, sounds
Live
cool.
Short, get ducks. And we've since, I've worked with a photographer out of Colorado named Jake Latondre. He's a very, very, very capable videographer and photographer. And I started taking him around the world with me. Not everywhere. I can't afford him, but I try to take him to these destinations. And we're telling these little 7 to 8 minute video stories, little short films. For example, the one we just did, Argentina, is called The Path. We're on that particular place. It's one of my favorite places on earth to hunt. One of my singular favorite places on earth to duck hunt is in Argentina. I had been for 17 years in a row.
Wow.
Scouting and working. I don't just go down there to the same lodge. Every year I go, I regroup with my outfitters. I've got four down there. And then I meet new outfitters if I think they've got something better or something I need to look at. And I had gone to this place. It was early in our spring. It was mid-April. Their season had just opened. 6 months opposite season down there. And we're hunting a 130 square mile marsh, the second biggest natural wetland in Argentina. And you can't hardly get there from here. It is flying to Buenos Aires, and it's a 10-hour drive. And I don't mean 9.5 hours with traffic. I mean 10 hours on a good day. And the last hour is down a dirt road, unless it's been raining. Then you're locked into four-wheel drive, spinning the whole way.
Wow. Good, guys.
But once you get there, it is a unbelievable, wild, pure duck hunting paradise.
Ramsey,
place. I realized the first time I hunted it, I wanted my ashes scattered there.
Yeah,
and we told our story. We told, you know, that's just the kind of story we tell. And the outfitter I met, how he ended up guiding there and finding that, he had a past very similar to mine in terms of a tragic event when he was younger. So we just made a little story out of that. It's not just about that kind of stuff. It's about duck hunting.
You know, Ramsey, we're out of time. We're out of radio time. We've only got a couple more minutes here on the darn thing. But there's one question I've got to ask you, and I've only got about a minute here. Is the mallard shooting as good as I hear in Russia, or are those stories that are not accurate?
No, it's good. Mallards are throughout the whole northern hemisphere, and the mallard hunting is good in Europe. It's good in Russia. One of the most interesting and best mallard hunts I've ever been on was at about 10,000 foot elevation in a massive farming environment in Mongolia.
Mongolia?
That was one of the best. Hunting mallard ducks that had never, ever seen a decoy or a mojo or herd of ducks at all.
What's the limit?
There was no limit.
Tobin's on his way.
yeah, it was good.
Hey,
it was
thank you for getting up. We'd like for you. I know your schedule. You're gone and all. You're gone more than your home. So we'll try to hook up with you again. Get you back on here real quick. I appreciate you probably more than you'll ever know.
What a delight! Just get you to talk though.
Yeah, you're doing great. Ramsey, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
All right.
GetDucks.com. Is that right?
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. GetDucks.com.
Yeah, check out his website. Look at all the different kinds of ducks.
It'd be good for you to go kill a king eider. You're tough.
I want to get one. Those are really a beautiful duck. I mean, God, they're cool looking.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And that's the ultimate goal as a waterfowler.
Yeah.
Is kind of like tarpon on a fly rod. You know, that's where it's at on that thing. You know. Bad deal. Well, that wraps up. Boy, I like him.
Yeah.
He was a good guest.
He was great.
Got to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you in the great outdoors.
Happy Easter. Have a great week. So long, everybody.